This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And our topic this week is...
The Panacea of Modern Ports.
But first, we have some follow-up.
Yes, we do. Yannick, I have booted up my PS4. It's a big event.
Yeah, it is.
So, I guess I'm already teasing our next episode in the follow-up, but for this time, Yannick mentioned last episode that there was a big Gran Turismo 7 update, Spec 2, to name it, and I've installed it, and I haven't played anything in it. I just literally went through the music rallies that were in a previous update.
Oh, dear God.
I knew you would... You would like that. So I've completed all the music rallies, and like with the first set, I was able to ace them or gold them, all of them except one. So right now I have two that are still with a silver trophy. So out of 10, I think it means it's 8 gold trophies and 2 silver. So I'll be for sure trying to revisit the second silver trophy, because the first one, every time I retry it, it's the survive with the, it's the Shelby Cobra, yes, or I think it's a Shelby Cobra replica. This one, I always come, I think I'm 200 meters away from the gold trophy, so every time I try it, I always struggle. But yeah, so it seems that they were fine. I for sure, I don't know if you went to see or try them, you won't like them. Even myself, enjoy the first set most than these ones. I think the new soundtrack they bring was a bit more boring than the first ones. But overall, I do like the concept. So I kind of wish they bring some more, but I'll take what I got.
I did boot it up. I did go into the music rally menu. I looked at the songs. I was like, and I went back into the normal menu and I played a bunch of weekly challenges. I'm more into the main content of the patch than the...
No worries. I'll for sure go look at it. I won't put a deadline on when, but a lot of the content we already discussed got me intrigued. So I'm sure I'll go revisit. And dare I say, maybe finish the main campaign?
Maybe. That would be cool.
But I'm not making zero promises right now.
In the time that you haven't been playing GT7, I've almost beaten Forza Motorsport. So that's...
For one sec, I thought you were about to enumerate all the games you've beaten since I've last played GT7, which I'm sure is more than one.
Oh, it's definitely more than one. But as you know, I'm not very good at finishing games. I'm very good at getting 30% into a game and then leaving it on the shelf for 3 years.
That's true.
All right.
So that's it for my follow-up.
Cool. Next up, I have some follow-up for episode 212, Kool-Aid Man, with a press release, which was the episode I did about Red Hat Linux's Great Summer. This week, a bunch of news came out with regards to that. So first of all, the open ELA repositories are now open. This was the joint project between CIQ, which is Rocky Linux's main sponsor, SUSE Linux, and Oracle Linux, to provide a base enterprise Linux distribution for an enterprise Linux ecosystem to bloom off of. Essentially, it is a one-to-one replacement for the old RHEL repositories that Red Hat shut down over the summer. And it is meant to be a resource for developers of enterprise Linux distributions, not a distribution in itself, which is the important clarifying point that was missing before that led to a bunch of ambiguity. It's just a repo with source code in it. It's debranded Red Hat Linux source code. That's it. Nothing more. And if you want to use it as a base, you can, but you don't have to. Sort of going parallel to that, I mentioned that SUSE was saying that they were going to put out like a big Red Hat Enterprise Linux based distribution. They had invested a bunch of money into that. What I found out since we recorded that episode is that actually SUSE is completely redoing their product line right now. Like pretty much every existing product is on the chopping block, and they are going to be getting new replacements based on the Adaptive Linux Platform, I think it's called, which is their new product strategy. And it's pretty interesting, and they have a lot of weird approaches, although their roadmap is also kind of a mess. Like, they have two products trying to do the same thing going forward, which is kind of awkward. So there's a lot of ambiguity in there. But to me, looking at their new product roadmap, it makes no sense where they would actually fit in the Red Hat Enterprise Linux derivative product. So I'm looking forward to getting more details on that, because it's still not really clear what they're doing there. And closing out the Enterprise Linux news, earlier this week, Alma Linux 9.3 was released. This is the first minor release of Alma Linux to be made available following the events of the summer. Normally, they release within a day or two of a RHEL release because they're just recompiling and adding new wallpapers. But because they are no longer committing to tracking one-to-one with RHEL, they want to be a bit more diligent about testing their releases before letting them out in the wild. So they also took the opportunity to wait until Monday to ship instead of shipping on a Friday, because they could have shipped on a Friday, but it's a terrible idea. So they did that. Just to add a little bit more context, Alma has been doing absolutely everything by the rules since the events of the summer, mainly to try and stay on Red Hat's good side, I think. And one thing that's really, really cool that they've done is if you go check the Alma Linux repositories, every patch or commit that has been imported from Red Hat source somehow is attributed to which channel it came from, so you can trace it back. So if something is from CentOS Stream, like most of them are, it'll say, hey, this comes from CentOS Stream. If something was ripped from a Universal Base Image, which is one of the many loopholes that was identified to go extract source code, they'll say this is from a UBI. So everything is clearly clearly attributed. I'm sure people are going to have like a great time next year, probably, to calculate like in the last year what were the sources of various Red Hat commits, and how much do you have to cheat to go get them versus how much of them show up in official places. But I love that transparency coming from Alma, and it really reaffirms to me why I like them so much. So that's it for Enterprise Linux news. I'm probably not going to be super covering this in depth because I know it's a very niche topic, but this is directly related to what we talked about in the episode, so I think it's kind of relevant for now. Next up, I have some programming notes. So the first thing, as you could have kind of hinted at earlier, the Game of the Year episode is coming up in 2 weeks. We're doing it a little bit earlier this year. So if you want to let us know what video games you enjoyed this year, please let us know on Mastodon. We are at limipo_podcast@mastodon.social.
Right, and I would just like to note that the reason it is a bit earlier is just because this year I am closing the year with the last episode of the year.
Exactly. So speaking of that, the holiday hiatus is coming up. Last episode before the winter holidays is going to be Likardivia's episode on December 17th, and then we'll be returning with our first episode of 2024 on January 14th with my episode. And following that, there will also be a hiatus when I go to Japan. But we'll talk about that when we come back from the vacation. So that does it for now. Let's get into the main topic.
Oa, I was surprised to not hear that you would like to get feedback for the Game of the Year episode.
I did say that.
Oh, okay. Then I guess I blanked. Oh boy. That's a good way to start a recording session for this week.
We're off our game because we're recording early.
Yeah. But good, I guess I'll go into the main topic and you can ignore my comment. Good. So like I said in the introduction, this week I want to talk about the panacea of modern ports. And if you didn't understand what I mean by that, then yes, baby, I'm going to talk about the USB-C or USB standard and in relation the ports, so USB-C.
You're telling me I should have made a whiskey instead of a coffee before this recording?
I think a coffee is fine. You might want to start drinking whiskey after we're done recording, but I think you're okay with what you have right now. This idea literally came to me in the past few weeks, especially while listening to the recent, I guess, tech podcast and just consuming all the content following the late October / the Halloween Apple event. So following this announcement, if you were not aware, Apple announced new Macs. And one, dare I say, kind of global or kind of main deception that I've seen in the content post event is a bunch of reviewers are disappointed of the lack of updates to Apple peripherals. It seems that in this year of Apple goes all in USB-C, even on the iPhone, people were expecting that Apple would update the peripherals like the Magic Mouse, the Magic Trackpad, and both versions of the Magic Keyboard, the short one and the extended one, or I think they call it the extended one, I forgot. But to this day, they still charge via Lightning. To note though, they still come with the Lightning to USB-C cable when either you buy an iMac or any computer that comes with them, or if you buy them standalone. At the first glance, all of this kind of these comments seemed a bit weird. I don't want to say that they were rubbing me the wrong way, but I'm kind of a bit laid back onto this, oh, we need USB-C everywhere, and give me USB-C so I can throw all of my other cables, so I can standardize into one charging peripherals or charging port. To me, like I have both versions. I have the extended version. I have the small version. I kind of regret to get by getting the extended version, but that's for a different topic. But all of this to say is they work fine. Even if you have to spear the Magic Mouse to charge it, we won't discuss this technical decision or this design decision. But they still do what they've been tasked to do, is input keys and allow you to move your cursor. That was something we couldn't say a few years ago about Apple, I guess, peripherals or included peripherals.
The one thing I would add, though, to that sort of comment about the commentary that we heard is,
yes,
I wouldn't say that's like necessarily like a widespread take from regular users. I think Apple commentators, the same kind of people who would be obsessed with like color-coded USB cables for the new iPhones, and who would comment on the rumors of that, like if you're at that level of commenting about the rumors of the color of the USB cables that are going to come with your iPhone, like you have certain kinds of brain worms, and I mean that in a non-derogatory way, and you're not really a regular user. I don't think the regular user is out there saying, like, I'm not going to buy an iPhone if there aren't going to be color-coded USB cables.
And I think you are correct on that front. And that's where I got this weird feeling. I call it weird feeling because I'm still, even today, while we're going to this episode, kind of struggling to describe it. I guess it's just this kind of meh attitude or approach to upgrading everything that can be charged and connected between two devices via USB-C. I think you're correct. That is a tech pundit kind of a ideal world. And overall, what that meant is I wanted to look at the landscape of the USB standard in 2023 and looking forward to see why a lot of people are like, we want that everywhere. Because the underlying argument for this, it is simplicity. But every time I hear about USB-C as a standard, that's not what it is about. It is simplicity, but let's put like an asterisk, a double asterisk, a cross, like a sword, like all the symbols that you put and punctuations you put to really have like notes and asterisks and things like that. So I've heard about that a lot, but I wanted to consume that content by myself, and that's why I decided this week that we shall go through the USB standards and its different evolution. So we will start about, which I think is the simplest part. It is literally the connector and the ports. Because if you look at how the USB standard is defined, more or less, the complex part was USB 2.0. Because if you look at the first version of USB, you had two types of port. The typical type A, which is, if I ask you what a USB port looks like, you are imagining a type A connector. The type B connector is also known as the one you see on a printer connector or port.
Scanners.
Yes. I don't know why those devices get this type of port, but they do. compared to, I would say, a typical connector and port of type A.
Well, there's a reason each side has a different connector. It's that it's a unidirectional thing, right? So I don't know how, if you're going to get into that later. Do you know about like the difference between like the host and the peripheral sides?
Yes, I'm not going into those details, but what I meant though is that in theory, yeah, that's fair that the type B, no, that's why I was mixing it up. Okay, no, fair.
But yeah, like the important thing to note is you couldn't have it be a type A to type A because there right. are certain voltage, there's voltage on a pin that is sent on one side, and if you have it going both ways, then you need to have like diodes or something on the other side. Anyway, it's an electrical engineering person's nightmare, so they just have different connectors so you can't fuck it up.
Right, and that's why I misspoke, and I want to say that's why we have type A and type B mm-hmm. in the US-1 spec, because in the US-1, the USB-1 spec, and in most of the USB spec, you cannot have extension cords, because they're not defined as specification, because you end up with more or less twice the same, like, yeah, you end up with the same type of port on each end. And you're correct, Yannick, it is not up to spec, if we say so. So in most cases, you'll end up with either a direct connection to a PCB to a USB A, a type A port, or you end up with a type B to type A cable from two devices. And at that time in USB 1.0, again, there was one cable type and it was simpler, but people were already thinking about those two types of connectors are pretty big, and that's why there was at that time a lot of proprietary shrinkage of those connectors, and that's why in the USB 2.0 that's where we saw the proliferation of different smaller versions of the typical type A to type B. So you would have the mini A and the mini B, and the micro A and the micro B connectors that became official. I always like to refer to the mini USB ports as the one on the PS3 controllers, and the micro ones and the one that you don't like that is everywhere on all the stupid gadgets that you have that needs recharging.
Except for Sony cameras, which continued to use mini B for the longest time imaginable. They went from mini B to USB-C.
Really? Oh, I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, no, I've seen a lot of cameras going away through from the proprietary end, excuse me, to micro B type connector. And then, of course, USB type C. The funny part is then, okay, yes, we now have smaller connectors, which meant that USB is a bit more flexible to where it is located. But think about it. It is at around the same time of the 2.0 standard that those ports went literally everywhere. Like USB became literally, like its name suggests, the universal bus or universal, I would even say the universal connector.
I think the main thing to consider there is that USB 1, it was proliferating quite a lot, except it was mainly only used for mouse and keyboard type accessories, maybe a microphone if you were lucky. And then when USB 2 came out, the speeds were actually usable for normal things, so you actually did want to put it on other things than just keyboards and mice and game controllers and microphones.
I like that you talk about speeds, because we will be talking about the USB protocol later.
Yeah.
Because as you can see already in our progression of the different connectors and ports, we're already on our way to USB 3 and even USB 4. And it's pretty simple. Yeah, okay, you might not like the micro B like I do, and the mini B was fine, and things like that. But overall, like, USB had two shapes, three, or like two combination of shapes to define what Yannick has mentioned, where on one end you have one style and on the other end you have a different style, so you don't plug it the wrong end. Though, I'll have a link in the show notes where you can see an image from Wikipedia where it compares all the connector types and the differences between a mini A and a mini B and a micro A and a micro B, like where you have both micro connectors on both ends. Like, I don't think I've experienced these type of cable where it goes from a mini to mini and micro to micro, but they kind of look like you can force them and then they just will go in, which is kind of ironic knowing that the cable is unidirectional. Like,
I'm just going to state now that I've never seen a mini A or a micro A, so I have no idea what they look like. I'm going to go look them up right now.
They look weird, and what I can do is send you the link that I'll include in the show notes so you can follow along, because we are quickly transitioning to USB 3, which is where the fun, quote-unquote, started. Because USB 3.x, so the third version of the standard defining protocol, defining the connectors and ports, define new Type A, Type B, and Micro B connectors. Yes, you're correct. They got rid of Mini A and Micro A. They kind of realized that nobody has a cable that goes from Mini to Mini or Micro to Micro. They go from Normal to Micro or Normal to Mini. But one of the key benefits of USB version 3 is that it gets faster rates, transfer rates. So to get that, they had to add more pins. But guess what? They don't want everybody to change their cables or change their computers or change their ports. So they've defined what I called, and I think they call like this, it's unclear what they're called, but to me they're called, quote unquote, the new Type A, quote unquote, the new Type B, and the new Micro B connectors.
The Micro B is a war crime. Like,
we'll come to the Micro B. I have a few things to talk about the other one first. But yes, the Micro B, I agree, is, oh boy. But the reason Yannick already mentions this is if you're following at home with an image, is that those ports are built in a certain such fashion that they are backward compatible with the USB 2 ports, meaning that in theory you can use them with USB 2 peripherals, or you can use a USB 3 cable in a USB 2 port and that will work, quote unquote. I'm pretty sure about the connecting a USB 2 peripheral and a USB 3 port, but I'm not sure if the pins, the extra pins on a Type A connector is kind of build interference if you plug it in a normal USB 2 port. But from my understanding of the standard, that's why they've done it this way. So right now, it's the right moment to, if you haven't clicked it, to go look, because if you don't remember what a USB 3 Type A connector looks like, or even the Type B, it's time to get a refresher. And now, Yannick, it's time to talk about the Micro B connector. Because, boy,
I had to deal with this with a device at work earlier this year. And when I first saw the cable, I thought it was a joke. Like, I thought there were two cables stuck together for some reason. That, like, they had fused together at the factory or something. And I was like, is this cable broken? And then the guy was like, no, that's actually USB 3 Micro B. And I'm like, who the fuck thought this was a good idea?
Was it your first time encountering a Micro B USB 3 connector?
It's the only time I've ever seen a Micro B is on that cursed device.
I've seen a few of them, mainly on about 10-year-old external hard drives. That's when I've seen them the most.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Is that the end on the hard drive itself is the new Micro B connector, and then the other end is a normal, quote unquote, normal shaped USB-C Type A connector. But yeah,
I've only seen this on industrial grade cameras is where I saw it.
And I think that's now with the reflection of time, and then we can see, especially when we compare it with Lightning or even USB Type-C as a connector. That's kind of what you realize is with the port in the USB 3 generation, let's call it generation here, it seems that the USB interfacing forum, I think that's, I forgot to note what the I meant, but I think that's interfacing or implementing, excuse me,
implementation forum. Yeah.
Yes, or implementation forum, something like that. So the USB IF, it seemed that they designed the Type-A connector and they're like, oh yeah, we need four extra pins for faster speeds. And we can find the space
extra pins, but yeah.
See, I wasn't sure, but that's something I forgot to write in my notes. I've seen the images. You'll see the images too now. But now I'm reading my notes. So these extra pins, there are five.
Yes.
We can plug them in the Type-A connector. Oh, we need to do the same thing on the Type-B connector so we don't have the problem. Okay, you know what? It's kind of like a rectangular shape, but like more vertical or more like portrait-oriented connector. So we can figure out to put them on the top too. And then they realize, oh crap, we also have to support micro-B because everybody has micro-connectors everywhere. And that's where I think it is no longer called, to me it shouldn't be called a micro-connector because the
it's
shape
so
it has,
wide.
It's so wide. It is thin, but it's so wide and it feels so brittle to use that I would be worried to plug-unplug this connector more than three times. And I think in one of my work stuff box that I have here in my home office, where it's like when we pack for COVID, I brought all the shit. Like I had one of those hard drive, and I think I've used it twice, and it's still in the box, and I think it's still in the box connected with the cable on that end because I was so worried it would break.
Everyone bitched when Lightning came out that, oh my God, can you imagine? Apple is changing the connector again, not realizing that Apple had basically two connectors the entire time the iPhone existed. It was either...
Now three?
Yeah, now three. But still, there are more USB connectors than there are iPhone connectors, proprietary or not. Like, there was Standard B, Mini B, Micro B, Micro B Super Speed. All of these are USB standards, and then Type-C, of course. Mm-hmm. I think most people jumped the Micro B Super Speed. They were like, we can't put this on our device. It'll be too embarrassing. Let's just go straight to Type-C. But
I'll just stop you just right there because you mentioned something I'll mention a lot. You mentioned the word Super Speed. And it is a new term that the USB IF decided to invent for USB 3 to say it's faster. So if you hear Super Speed again, that's what it means.
But it's also the official name for the wide Micro B, because we don't really have a name for it otherwise.
Yes, that I think that's how they define what I call the new Type A. Is they call it the Type A Super Speed, Type B Super Speed, and the Micro B Super Speed. But they use Super Speed everywhere, and we'll see that soon.
A mess. But yeah, so I think a lot of the complaints about the number of connector changes is super overblown, because USB does the same thing, and all of their connectors were worse than until Type-C, basically. All of them were worse than the ones that Apple had. And that's just the thing I want to plant into your mind for now, and I think we'll talk about the rest later.
Yeah, and I think to kind of continue on that thought, I would say that if we compare to the competition on the mobile space, so we had the pre-smartphone era, where I would say that a lot of those phones use proprietary charging cables. You add the smartphone era, which had a great combination of proprietary cable, and that doesn't start with the iPhone here. Like I include like cellular PDAs, I include all the Windows Mobile shit. A lot of them either had proprietary connectors, Mini B, Micro B, and some other variation of those USB 2 or even USB 1 ports, but proprietary, but still USB compatible. And then when we jump into the Android world, I still think that what you've described as the 30-pin connector, the Lightning connector, and then USB-C, generally speaking, also applies to Android phone. The main distinction, though, is when people buy an Android phone X, they might not buy Android phone Y from the same company again. And then that, let's say they went from Samsung to HTC or HTC to Samsung, might makes more sense for my argument. Then they have to deal with the different trade-off that these company made, because in, that's why my point is I'm trying to make here is in the Android world's defense, I would say that if you stick in one brand with flagship phone, and I'm putting a lot of asterisks right now, I think you can still, in the last 10, 15 years, end up with more or less three ports.
I think if you were an early adopter to Android, you had more more connector changes in a smaller time span than the iPhone did. But they were the same people complaining about the changing of ports on the iPhone, which is very strange and always stood out as being strange to me. It's like, do you not realize that you had three ports in the time that we had two ports?
Fair. And I think that's the minimum they can see is like either some form of micro B or proprietary to micro B to micro B to USB-C, which is three. It's not too bad at three, but you're correct that some companies even seen more than three. But in their defense, they're at three. The iPhone is at three right now. But for a long time, they were more or less at two port changes, which is two is better than one and three here in this argument.
It ultimately doesn't matter if the end result is you get a shitty connector.
And totally, I guess, fair. Nobody wants to use the micro B super speed connector ever again.
Exactly.
Two last notes regarding the USB 3 port standard. We talked about the super speed branding. The connector also was denoted by a blue color. So both on the connector side and in the port side, you would see blue, the same shade of blue, to say, hey, this is a USB 3 or 3.0, and we'll come back on this again.
Interestingly, they don't do that with Type-C cables. Foreshadowing.
Yes, but I think there's a clear explanation why for this. And also USB 3 was the, like physically speaking, it was the introduction a new lane providing more or less full duplex data exchange between the host and the device, because it was quote unquote not, it was asynchronous before. One way would talk, the other would reply, and now both of them can do that at the same time over the same wire, which brings more data transfer speeds. Okay, before we jump into USB 4, and here it's USB 4, one word, because they decided to change the naming scheme for one reason or another, that's where we talk about the Type-C, and that's where it comes into play, because it got created mid-cycle or midway through the USB 3.x generation, which, more or less a whole 6 years after the first USB 3.0 specification. And one benefit is USB 4, which is the latest generation of USB, is it requires the usage of the Type-C port and connector. So no more fumbling with the Type-A and a Type-B and a Type-C and the micro and blah, blah, blah. Just one. And that, I think, is like, it's a great evolution for the last 20 years, like 25 years, excuse me, like from the introduction of USB 1 with the Type A and Type B to now, like one connector does it all. And I think that's, if you don't look deep into the USB world, you just see the port, and everybody, it goes back to the argument that you were mentioning, is like the non-nerds just see the cable, they see the port, they see the connector, and it's like they plug in the same way, so it's magic and it does the right thing. But that's kind of half or even just a third of the story, because what goes through that cable is the most important part. And I think that's kind of being downplayed now with the reasons I wanted to talk about this. Like we mentioned, a lot of the tech pundits will say we want USB everywhere, and if we focus just on charging, like USB-C everywhere kind of makes sense. But the idea behind the USB-C types, the USB Type-C connector, is it is a tunnel for everything. USB 4 as a protocol is a tunnel for everything. But before I go into that, we gotta talk about the different USB protocols. Would you want to add something about the ports and connectors before we do that, though?
Nope. I think okay. You got it pretty well covered.
Do you remember when USB 1 was introduced?
96.
You're correct. So 1.0 was introduced in 96, and I'm happy that you mentioned that the 1.0 peripherals were more or less like USB was to replace like mouse and keyboard connectors. Like I was about to say ADB was a Mac one, right?
Yep.
But I was thinking about PSI, PCI?
PS2.
PS2, thank you. That was the PC one I forgot about. And you're correct that at that time it was for that. And I think now that it explains some of the nomenclature I was reading about in preparation for this episode about the low speed mode and the full speed mode of USB 1.x. Because the distinction between the protocol version 1.0 and 1.1 at that time, or through my research on the web in 2013, it seems to be lost to time. They both mentioned that both 1.0 and 1.1 versions of USB were able to exchange data at both the load speed mode, which is 1.5 megabits per second of throughput, whereas the full speed mode is 12 megabits per second. From my own research, it seemed to imply that 1.1 should always work at 12, unless it tries to talk to a USB 1.0, but there's a few kind of literature that I found while Googling that said that USB 1.1 supports both speeds. So unclear to me today what's the differences, but again, it could just be that it was slowly but surely adding more peripherals that needed more throughput over a USB connection, hence the different speeds.
It's a long time ago, so I think I might be misremembering this, but remember that basically the iMac was the first major computer to ship with USB, and that one of the key use cases for USB on that device was USB floppy drives, which you would not necessarily benefit from using the full 12 megabit speed on a floppy drive, right? So I think in that case, you would probably want to downgrade it. I think the other thing is probably power requirements. You would have low power devices on your bus that would run at the low speed, and high power peripherals that would run at the high speed. So you wouldn't necessarily be able to use all of your USB ports with high power peripherals. You would need to balance it out. So maybe a keyboard and a mouse that are low power, and then maybe a USB compact flash reader that was high.
Yeah, because even in 1.x world, any kind of device power, device charging a specification was not even part of that. So that could explain those two low modes and high modes. I remember the 12 megabits, but not the 1.5. And funnily enough, I was looking at the tech spec of the iMac Z3, and it seems to have shipped with 1.1. Mm-hmm. So maybe the distinction got literally lost to time. The few mentioned I've seen during my research is that there was not that much USB peripherals that ship between 96 to 98. So yes, the spec was out as a 1.0, but it seems that a lot of the USB peripherals were shipped as 1.1 devices. So seems again that the distinction is lost to time. But who cares? Because nobody cares about 12 megabits per second exchange, that throughput between two devices. We want to talk about USB 2.0. And I think that's literally where I started. I say that, but I think my first computer was 1.1 because I remember having to buy a USB PCI card to get faster throughput with those specific USB ports. So introduced in the 2000s, on April 2000, the main benefit of USB 2.0 was bringing more throughput with 480 megabits per second, which was also named iSpeed. And then that starts the nice introduction of shitty marketing around USB standards, and we'll get to that into more. I kind of forgot that we talk a lot about USB power delivery these days, but there was its ancestor, or the previous definition, which was called battery charging. So there was two or three levels, but that is why up until power delivery, you could not get more than 7.5 watts of power through a USB port, because literally that was the maximum from the spec from the battery charging. But that was created part of the USB 2.0 specs. And that to me is kind of like, there was not, even if you start to look at the different evolution of 2.0, there was nothing more than that. There was just like, we want USB everywhere, and that's where it got mainstream. So a lot of the evolution to me, they are on the port side and less about the speed, because the bump from 1.x to, or for 1.1 to 2 is so big that it allowed the creation and the proliferation of the USB as a standard and as a port. And it took little, like 5 years, 6 years to kind of start to think about, oh yeah, we're kind of saturating the 400 megabits throughput of a USB 2.0 connection, because now we start to have digital cameras that could either, you have a car, like a memory stick reader or a compact flash reader or an SD card reader that would require more throughput to send your photo faster, or even the camera itself would need something like that.
Notably, during that period, the iPod also moved off of FireWire to USB 2.0.
That's true. That's true. And I am unsure. When was the first iPod again?
2001.
2001, okay. So in theory, USB 2.0 was already out when the first iPod launched.
Yes, that's, and there were even Macs that were shipping with it already.
Right, okay. So, but again, even at that point, because of the way USB as a standard is implemented between devices, the theoretical max throughput, even on FireWire 400, was more achievable. Like you would be able to achieve more like real life throughput with a FireWire connection versus a USB connection at that
point. There's more of a CPU bottleneck if you're using USB than if you're using FireWire.
Right, at that time. Yes. At that time, because that's kind of getting away. And we'll talk about that, about why soon. Okay, now the complexity of the USB protocol starts. 1.1 was simple, 2.0 was simple. You get one throughput speed, that's it, that's all. Who cares about the connector? Who cares about the device? That's it, that's what you get. Then comes 3.0. For sure, in 2007, 2008, so that shipped in November 2008, people wanted more speed because they were connecting a lot of peripherals to their computer and they wanted to get the data exchange to be faster. Let's take my example of photography again. I wanted my photos to be faster on my computer than what I can do over 2.0. So they literally bumped the throughput to 5 gigabits per second. And that's why they introduced the super speed name, because we had low speed, full speed, high speed. We have to go bigger than high speed. And even full speed and high speed is kind of weird. But that's why they came up with the super speed. Like I discussed in the port section, because the port themselves are backward compatible, USB 3 in the spec supports the USB 2 speeds. And it is the super speed quote-unquote technology that brings full duplex communication, which brings those big gains into the throughput. And that's more or less where we'll see the evolution of throughput speed in the future iteration. In the same generation of USB 3, we got USB 3.1 in July of 13. It is weird because it is not an additive standardization. It is a replacement. So 3.1 fully replaces 3.0. And that's where the complex part starts. And I'll ask you to be not patient, but to follow along, because that part is, I think that's where they lose a lot of people. And overall, what they're trying to achieve is just give you more speed. They just want you to have a link between two devices that is faster. And you know what? That's what we want. I want my SSD, and now when we're getting slowly but surely into the SSD world of everything should be fast because it uses flash memory. So if it's fast and I'll bring it along with me between two devices, I want to use it to use its I want to use its throughput as much as I can, like if it was inside the computer itself. So USB 3.1, which, like I said, fully replaced 2.0, brings two generation, aptly named Gen 1 and Gen 2. So Gen 1 is also still named Super Speed. It is the exact same definition that we discussed. So 5 gigabits per second throughput, still fully duplex, but the USB 3.1 Gen 2, also named Super Speed Plus, brings 10 gigabits per second of throughput. And that's nice. Hey, we get twice the speed, more or less over the same cable, over the same devices. Again, for sure, you need the 3.1 compatible devices. Remember when I said that the port and the cable was blue colored to indicate 3.0, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
3.1 Gen 2, because again, like I mentioned, 3.1 Gen 1 is the same thing as 3.0. So those ports will be blue.
Mm-hmm.
To indicate that you can use the faster speed, they're teal colored. Because, of course, it's a shade of blue. Of course. It's not a different color. It's just teal. So I think personally, I've never seen any teal port. So I guess it means that I've never seen any 3.1 Gen 2 ports, which means that those ports are 10 gigabits per second. Like you mentioned, Nick, those colors don't exist when you use USB-C,
mm-hmm.
which made me realize that most of the USB-C port I've seen are USB 3.1 Gen 2. They're more or less giving you 10 gigabits per second of throughput, which is interesting because now we go to yet another replacement of the Generation 3. So the 3.2 specs.
Actually, before you get into that, so I've been shopping around for computers for something we will discuss in a future episode.
Okay.
This week was the first time I actually saw a USB port that has like a tiny little Super Speed logo next to the USB cable.
Okay.
USB port, sorry. But
yes.
I know about all of the Super Speed shit, so I know that it's complicated and it makes no sense. So I was like, okay, but which of the Super Speeds is it? And it doesn't say.
That's
just says Super Speed.
Does it say Super Speed or does it just say SS? Because that's
SS.
Also... Okay, so... And so, in theory, when you see SS, it would be 3.0 or 3.1 Gen 1 or 3.2 Gen 1 X1.
Jesus
Yay!
Christ.
Yes. We'll hold that thought for 3 seconds about the 3.2 specification because it's getting even more complex. But my understanding is when you see the Super Speed logo, it means more or less 5 gigabits per second. Whereas if you have seen a plus after it, which it's easy to do SS plus, that would mean 10 gigabits per second. And all of those are over a single lane. And that's where we will bring the concept of a lane, which is the introduced lanes just because they wanted to get faster cable. And I think that's how we can summarize the introduction of USB 3.2. They wanted to get more speed, but they realized that around the current architecture, and again, I'm not an electronic engineer, so the electrical part of things is not my forte, but my understanding is they were slowly but surely getting to the limit of what they could do over a single pair of wires inside your cable. They more or less stop at 10 gigabits, but for sure, people wanted faster cables and faster links between two devices. And we'll talk about Thunderbolt in just a bit, but Thunderbolt at that point was already getting faster too, because it has literally two lanes. So guess what? USB 3.2 introduced the concepts of two USB lanes in the same cable. Okay, Are you ready? Because this is where it gets really fucked up.
Oh, it wasn't already.
No. So
oh, no.
We mentioned that the introduction of 3.0 is to add double the speed on one lane.
Yes.
They've decided to introduce this extra lane and give you, again, twice the speed. But they've decided that they could give you the same 10 gigabits throughput, but by using the two lanes. So we end up with four types of USB 3.2 devices. The Gen 1 X1, also known as Super Speed USB 5 gigabits per second, which replaces the Super Speed name we discussed, and it is exactly the same standard as 3.0 or 3.1 Gen 1. If you start to search about Gen 1 X1, you'll see that the X1 is in parentheses in most cases.
Oh,
and the
God.
X1 means this generation of 3.2 uses one lane. There is Gen 1 X2. Oh, you already see the concept. X2 means it uses two lanes. But still, because it's a Gen 1, it gives you only 10 gigabits per second of throughput. But because it's over two lane, in theory, you get more real-life throughput closer to this 10 gigabits than if it was over one lane. Funnily enough, this was kind of excluded, or it exists, but not really implemented by nobody. And for sure, when, again, in 2019, the USB IF decided to put some name, and I think that's why they came up with the Super Speed USB and then the Speed branding. That's why they're like, we're not talking about Gen 1 X2. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. Okay, so Gen 2 X1, which is Super Speed USB 10 gigabits per second. We just talked about one that is a 10 gigabits, but that's not the same one, because this one replaces the Super Speed Plus naming and is the literal same thing as 3.1 Gen 2. So same speed, same name, same one lane. It's just it has a new name now. And last but not least, the real addition, in my opinion, of the 3.2 spec is the USB 3.2 Gen 2 X2, also known as Super Speed USB 20 gigabits per second.
Super Speed Plus.
No, they stopped calling Plus.
Oh.
Because it's a 20 gigabits. They mentioned 20 gigabits, but it doesn't have Super Speed. Like, the Plus was for the 10 gigabits over one lane. Now this is 20 gigabits over two lanes, so 10-10. Is my understanding.
I'm seeing conflicting information on this page, but then again, this is because they've changed the names like four times for all of these things. So
right. My understanding is all of these, so Gen 1 X2, Gen 2 X1, and Gen 2 X2 are in a category called Super Speed Plus, because we have to reuse the Super Speed Plus somehow. If it makes no fucking sense,
it's because it
welcome.
Doesn't.
You're not alone.
I feel like this is going to be one of those terrible episodes we do where we have a really good point at the end of the episode, but everyone's going to be lost in the technical details and turn off the episode before the end.
You know what? I try to minimize the technical details for this. Like, we're not talking about
that's
like
how
the
bad it is.
Exactly what it means, a lane and blah blah blah. It's just that I think the IF got so into the weeds about we need to tell exactly what it is that they lost that. Because in theory, what you want to know is, A, is my port on my two devices able to have a specific maximum throughput? And can I ensure that my cable does that too?
Yes.
Because we mentioned in the port section that USB 3.x add the introduction of USB-C throughout its lifespan. I mentioned that 3.2 was created in 2017, 3 years after the introduction of Type-C. So we've saw that all of these specifications, except the one that are Gen 2s that we just discussed, all of them can be implemented in all the connector types. So the super speed type A, the super speed type B, the super speed micro B, and type C. To get the faster speed, that's when the USB consortium realized, wait, we have USB type C. Maybe it would make sense if we'd say to people implementing our standards, no, just use type C for this. And that's what it means. To get the faster speed of the 3.2 of specification of USB, you need to use a type C connector, which I guess we're getting somewhere. We're kind of getting back to our simplify. I have one connector. I have a cable that has a connector on both ends. And when I plug in, I make sure that they speak the same thing.
If only it was that simple.
But no. So the gist of it for the USB 3 generation, I think, again, we can piggyback the intention behind all of these changes, is that the USB-C implementation forum wanted to give more throughput to users, because I wouldn't be surprised they got asked. Like, USB 3 as a generation was available for 11 years as a standard. It's still available, but as the current standard, I should have said. And from 2008 to 2019, there has been a lot of technology that has changed at a rapid pace. And I think that's what they were trying to do, is keep up. But I think they have neglected the U part of USB-C, which is the universalness of it. I think with trying to keep up, while maybe not changing the cable, because we know when we change the ports or change the connectors, people freak out, that it put a lot of technical nerdness or technical decision and technical implementation details in the hands of consumers, and now everybody is lost.
And ultimately, like, right now you're only talking about pure USB, right? So we haven't gotten...
just talking about pure USB.
We haven't gotten into Thunderbolt. We haven't gotten into alternate modes. We haven't gotten into a ton of other bullshit that USB can technically do.
I won't talk about the alternate modes. I'll make a small detour in my detour on Thunderbolt about them. But you're correct.
The main point I want to make is, I believe almost 10 years ago on the podcast, actually not 10 years ago because I don't think the podcast was running yet, but... No. Quite a long time ago on the podcast, I mentioned that there was this tweet that I had found where they had listed, like, here are all of the ways a connection can be negotiated on a USB-C to USB-C cable. And at the time, which I would estimate to be around 2016, 2017, before all of the specs were out, there were like 32 different ways you could negotiate a connection on a USB-C to USB-C cable. And they have only added technologies to that over time. So USB-C is a fucking hellhole and it's complicated. And that's why we're having trouble explaining everything on the episode, is because there's just too much it can do. And not all devices support all the things.
Agreed. And in preparation for this episode, I was looking around at what my current USB-C devices can do. And in my life these days, it's mainly my personal computer, which is an iMac M1, and my work computer, which is a MacBook Pro 16-inch M1 Pro. And the TLDR for this is they support some fashion of USB, but mainly support Thunderbolt 3. And we'll discuss what it means, but... that's that. So I don't know what it means for USB. I think it means a mix of some 3.2 Gen 2 one lane, I think. But I don't know which cable I need for that. Do I need a Thunderbolt 3 cable that is both USB Type-C? Do I need a USB 3 Gen 2 blah, blah, blah? I don't know.
And I think, like, we're the power users who should know this shit.
Yeah, but if it's complex for us, there's a big problem if we try to explain it to others.
Yes.
Which brings me to USB 4, not 4.0, even if it's called 4.0, USB 4, in one word, no space, USB 4, four characters.
Because it gets better after that.
Because why not change the naming? But before we talk about USB 4, I wanted to do a small detour, because I want to talk about power delivery. USB power delivery is a pretty old spec at this point. I think 12 years. I forgot to write the date.
2012.
So 11 years, even better. But it is a spec after battery charging specification. Remember, that was introduced in April 2000. Well, not April 2000, but part of the 2.0 generation, which was a few different versions of that spec that specifies that more or less, depending on voltage and blah, 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 you can get more or less 7.5 watts of power out of a USB port. PD allows you to go above that limit. Depending on which type of connector, you can get up to 240 watts. This is something I've learned part of my research. I was like, whoa, that's getting into the pretty intense territory where you can get 240 watts of power in a USB Type-C connector. But in general, USB power delivery, the idea behind it is it's more or less a different standard to negotiate which power device are is able to accept. So the charged device and the charging device are exchanging over the connector, and they negotiate which amount of wattage they can receive or they can put to the device. So let's say my iPhone can charge, I don't know, 15. I forgot what the new iPhone 15 can charge at, but for the sake of conversation, let's say 15 watts. But my charger can only give me 10. So they'll do the handshake, and my iPhone will charge at 10. If I give it a charger that can charge to 100 watts, then we'll do the negotiation and possibly go to 100 watts. Maybe no, depending on the cable. That's the fun part. But at least it is a standard that will define one way to do this negotiation to give you the amount of power. The reason I bring this up is it is one part of USB 4 that is saying, this is the only way how we specify how devices exchange data over a protocol to negotiate charging. The second part, I would like to hear your comment, because in my research, that's what I hear from USB 4. Don't forget, we're talking about USB 4. New spec says it requires USB PD support.
We're also only talking about things that have been written by the USBIF. There are proprietary extensions running over USB that can do whatever the hell they want. And in fact, like that was one of the things before power delivery was compatible with USB Type-C and all of that stuff. Like there were unofficial specs for power delivery. Like I think Qualcomm had one, Qualcomm Fast Charge or something like that, which is not power delivery and not compatible with it. But it's another way you can charge things, and it fits in the same hole, except if your charger doesn't speak the thing and your device doesn't speak the thing, it won't work. And it's like, cool.
At least it won't work. It's not that it will blow up, right? Because we're still talking about batteries and lithium and all that fun stuff.
I mean, there was that guy at Google who had an entire blog where he only reviewed USB-C cables and like 90% of them burnt down.
Yes, I remember this.
So,
yes. Yes, because we had to have somebody do that, which is pretty interesting. But again, in theory, USB 4, which was announced, or the spec was defined, was approved and defined in August 2019, so it's pretty recent, has two big requires. The Type-C connector, so no bullshit about Type-A and Type-B and then the super speed, blah, 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 that's gone. So one connector, we're getting somewhere, uses USB PD, okay, we're getting somewhere, based on Thunderbolt 3, the protocol spec, so they kind of interoperable the devices, the one side that is nice is they are based on the same protocol specification, but the interoperability is optional for certain devices and required for others, like USB hubs is required to support the Thunderbolt 3 spec if they want to be a USB 4 device, but device that is USB 4 is not forced to support Thunderbolt 3.
Of course not.
Of course not. But at least, like, you know, a hub makes sense, like, that it can do more or less the pass through and things like that. So that's pretty nice. We're getting somewhere. That's pretty neat.
I mean, I'll have to see an actual hub that implements Thunderbolt 3 correctly before I believe it.
Oh, yeah, or USB 4, right?
Yes.
It supports up to 40 gigabits per second of throughput. And also because It can also, its minimum throughput is 20 gigabits per second, which is the same as the fastest 3.2. But the way, with the changes in the protocol and things like that, they can provide more real-life effective throughputs, even in its minimal version of 20 gigabits compared to 3.2. So you know what, like, depending on the implementation, you can either get maybe like a 15-20% bump. Like, I'm throwing out a number like this just to say, like, based on the same theoretical throughput, in theory, in real life, you can get faster speed, or you can just get the double because your device supports the 40 gigabits per second. Like Thunderbolt, and generally like Thunderbolt, it allows for tunneling of other protocols like DisplayPort and PCI Express, which Yannick has mentioned with all the Ethernet modes and kind of talking about Thunderbolt. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, we haven't talked too much about the speeds and things like that, except just to say 40 gigabits, because there are versions of USB 4.
Yep.
Not 4.1, not 4.2. There's USB 4 V1, and there's USB 4 V2. Why? I don't know.
Technically, but it's USB 4 2.0, which is even funnier. Even,
yes, it's V2.0 even. So yes, yes, you're correct. It's V2.0. And guess what? Part of V2.0, we're getting back the gen nomenclature for generation. I don't know why, but we do that. So we get 2X1. So again, it's a single lane. X1, single lane. X2, dual lane. So we get 4 generation of USB 4 space V2.0 space gen. So gen 2 X1 single lane at 10 gigabits of throughput. Gen 2.2 dual lane. Guess the throughput? Yes, 20 gigabits. And it also has a marketing name because bye bye super speed. It's just called USB 20 gigabits per second. Okay. Why 2X1 doesn't have a marketing name? I don't know, but there's not. There's Gen 3 X1, so single lane at 20 gigabits. Gen 3 X2, dual lane at 40 gigabits, also has a marketing name called USB 40 gigabits per second. And then there's Gen 4, which drops the single versus dual lane. My understanding is it uses both lanes at the same time. It's just that one is symmetric and the other one is asymmetric. So if you use the symmetric version, you get 80 gigabits per second, also named USB 80 gigabits per second. And the asymmetric version, you can get up to 120 gigabits per second and no marketing name. We were there. We were so close. And then V2.0 fucked it up again.
Well, so I think you should definitely link to the September 2022 naming scheme image in the USB Wikipedia page, because I think, like, the actual proposed change to just go USB 1, USB 2, USB 5, 10, 20. Oh, there are two 20s. Yeah, okay, okay, it makes sense.
You'll have to send me this because I haven't seen this in my research.
Yeah, the new official naming for USB specs is USB 1, USB 2, USB 5 gigabits per second, USB 10 gigabits per second, USB 20 gigabits per second, although there are two incompatible USB 20 gigabits per second, so they've already spoiled it. Fun. USB 40 gigabits per second and USB 80 gigabits per second, because USB 4 2x2 and USB 3.2 2x2 are not compatible. Or some shit. I don't know. It's complicated. I don't want to think about USB anymore. We should discontinue USB and replace it with a better USB.
Okay. There's a quote that I literally grabbed from Wikipedia. The USB 4 spec page. And it's golden. Because they say, Gold stated that in the USB 4 specification are increasing bandwidth. Okay, we got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Helping to converge on the USB-C connector ecosystem.
Yeah.
We got it. And, okay, don't forget, I'm in a quote right now. Mm-hmm. Quote, minimize end-user confusion.
Nailed
end
it.
End quote.
Nailed it.
Some of the key areas to achieve this are using a single USB-C connector type while retaining compatibility with the existing USB and Thunderbolt product. End of the quote I wanted to share today. Yeah. I think we're all in with increasing bandwidth, because if we're using wired, we want something faster than wireless. I think that's the basic assumption, something wired in is faster than wireless. Okay, thank you, we got that. Converging on USB-C, thank you, we got that. Oh boy, I don't think we've minimized end user confusion. No. At least with the new naming convention, 3 years after, like you said, it's in 2012, it's 3 years after the first spec. That's when they put it. So, oh well, I guess it's part of the generation's goal.
The thing, though, is that I think, for the most part, all of this confusion around, like, what do the USB 3, 3.1, 3.2, and 4 specs do, and how are they compatible, and all that stuff, like, that isn't really part of the problem with modern USB today. Like, it is a problem with modern USB, but it's not the main problem with USB today. Because I think, worst case, you're going to plug a USB, let's say 80 gigabits per second peripheral into a port that can only do 40, and it'll probably be downgraded to 40 if it's compatible at all, right? So I think, like, that is not an issue. I think the main issue people are encountering are with devices that, like, none of this is labeled anywhere, so that's a big issue.
Agreed.
Cables are not labeled, which is a big issue, because cables need to be compatible for at least, like, for the USB 3 and later stuff.
Agreed.
Then you have Thunderbolt, which we haven't talked about yet, which gets
about to go there.
There's that. And as soon as you introduce hubs or whatever in there, and if you're using anything that is not speaking pure USB, but is speaking either Thunderbolt or alternate modes, in a lot of cases, the hubs need to know about it. And because people love USB because it's cheap, cheap peripherals don't implement shit. And that is why the USB peripheral landscape is a hellscape. Is because you're trying to do things like, I have the same issue with HDMI hubs, right? It's not a USB only thing. It's a badly implemented standard thing. It's just that all of the standards happen to be badly implemented.
Yeah, I would like you to hold your horses, because you're kind of getting my conclusion.
Yeah,
but you're making a good point. And maybe the one thing I want to add on this is, I think the fact that it's hard to understand doesn't surprise me that people take shortcuts to implement the standard. If even the general explanation, the outside explanation of how it should work or how it should be presented to the users is complex, oh boy, I don't want to read the real, like, on paper specification that electro engineers need to read and implement. Mm-hmm. Because, oh boy, I am making an assumption, but hey, if technical implementation details leak through like this, it is sending me this message. You mentioned Thunderbolt, and I'm changing topics just because I wanted to do my small detour on Thunderbolt. Then we can go into conclusion, where we discuss about a lot of the points you mentioned, or more points you mentioned. But I kind of forgot it was an Intel creation that was also part of Apple collaborating with Intel, which, now with Apple kind of ditching Intel for CPUs, it's kind of weird. I don't know why, but I think it's fine. It can still be like a collaboration. But this fact reminded me in the weird situation we are in, where Apple ditched Intel for CPUs and now using their own, but still they have Thunderbolt support in their devices, because guess what? They kind of have invented it, or part of the consortium that invented it with Intel. More or less, if I can do a small generalization of Thunderbolt, is it offers two communication lanes that allows you to tunnel different protocols in it. And I've mentioned PCI Express, DisplayPort. It can tunnel USB connections in it. And that is why it allows a bit more flexibility. I understand that it might not be exactly 100% correct what I just said, but this has been the generalization that made me understood Thunderbolt, and that seems to be more or less correct-ish to understand the main differences between the USB in general and then FireWire and Thunderbolt. FireWire was not really a tunneling protocol, but Thunderbolt is.
It was Whatever. I'll just edit this out of the description.
No. You were about to say something that I said wrong about Firewire, I guess.
I think it's... Thunderbolt is very much like a spiritual successor to Firewire in a lot of ways, and it has commonalities in how both of the protocols are, let's say, more optimized than how USB was originally.
That's fair. There's five versions of Thunderbolt, I think. One and two can be described or more or less recognized by their ports, because it was using the mini display port connector. Mm-hmm. And then starting version 3, it switched to USB type C. And that's where things gets weird, is that in theory, the Thunderbolt technology is a competitor to USB, not C, but to the USB protocol. But like I said, it can be tunneled through it because it's one of the protocols that it can be used for. Also, I mentioned that Thunderbolt 3 and USB 4 are kind of like not compatible, but working in sync. Intel has announced a few years back that they wanted to allow more devices to use Thunderbolt. They lowered their certification effort. They did say they would allow you companies to implement Thunderbolt stuff for free, but they still reserve some rights of certification. But then they went back on this. It's weird in the recent years how Thunderbolt and USB are marching closer together while staying at the safe distance to each other.
Yeah.
They're kind of getting closer, but like they're like, okay, we're close enough for this generation. And then maybe in Thunderbolt 5, they kind of, like, my understanding is the speeds are aligned with the speeds you get from USB 4 version 2 Gen 4, which USB 80 gigabits per second. I'll stop the trolling with the weird names, but USB 80 gigabits is kind of what you get with Thunderbolt, with the tooling again. So the throughput advantage of the Thunderbolt technology seems to have slowed down a bit, but it's still more flexible for tunneling different protocols through it. And that's... I don't think it simplifies the whole we have one port and one port means one protocol, because again, it also uses USB-C for its last three version. I shouldn't say three, because five is just being kind of standardized and not really shipped. And like I mentioned, most Apple devices, for example, are not shipping with Thunderbolt 4. They're shipping with Thunderbolt 3. I think it's mainly the Mac Studio, the Mac Pro, mm-hmm. and the recent, not the one that I announced a few weeks ago, but the M2 MacBook Pros that are shipping with Thunderbolt 4 versus Thunderbolt 3.
The weird thing about Thunderbolt is, for as long as Thunderbolt stays kind of separate from USB, there is going to be added confusion with this. Because, for example, like Thunderbolt 5, like I think one of the main goals for Thunderbolt 5 is dual 8K at 60 hertz, right? And it's more, I think for the most part, it's always been positioned as a more pro level protocol to enable creative professional use cases. Like think people working at Pixar and other companies like that. Like basically everyone the Mac Studio is positioned at. So it's a little bit like higher grade of a protocol than USB is for the masses. But at the same time, it's just like, it's really strange that they're not just converging and saying, hey, USB is going to be universal for real for consumers and for pros, and we're just going to bake everything directly in there. And it would simplify a lot of things where, like for a couple months, it was possible to buy like either USB 4 devices that were technically compatible with, well, no, it was like only compatible in one sense. Yeah, it's really strange. The more you think about it, like the less it actually makes sense.
I am so happy that you're confused even in your own explanation. That's just perfect. Because
the thing that seems intuitive is not actually true when you get to thinking about it, and that's what sucks.
And then you end up more confused. Literally.
Yeah, you have to like do research, just answer basic questions about what the compatibility story with all of these things. It reminds me of back when we did the original Tokyo Travel Guide episode. I was talking about the Suica card. Or actually, it was just episode 2, I'm pretty sure. We were talking about the Suica card, and I was talking about how there was this like giant diagram of like, here are all the rules for the intercompatibility stories with all of the different regional train cars. Smart cards, and it was like this giant thing with like 50 different nodes on it and different arrows going in different directions, and I was like, that's the USB standard.
That's fair.
Luckily the trains have figured out their shit, and now pretty much everything is intercompatible. Not true with USB. It's only gotten more complicated.
Right. And that's where I think it leaves us, right? If we go back to the premise of why I started to research this, is why is everybody wanting to converge into one physical port when it has all the benefits and all the downsides of having different port or one port? Because think about it, if we get rid of HDMI, we get rid of DisplayPort, we get rid of Ethernet, everything goes through the USB Type-C connector, how will I be able to figure out if I plug this cable, what does this mean? Right? And I get that there is complexity into data exchange and then communication between two devices one-to-one. They want to exchange data. You talked about DisplayPort and two 8K monitors. That is data intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, yeah, you know what? I can see the benefit of centralizing to one port, but I also see the, no, I plug this, does it go in? No. It's not the right cable to do that speed. That's why. I'm even with all this, which I guess what I'm saying is I'm more convinced on the charging side, if it's just for charging side.
Yeah.
But because it is one port that does everything, you cannot get the simplified charging life without having the downsides of the data exchange side of things that we spent literally this whole episode discussing about. So I can get behind this life where I have a bunch of USB-C peripherals and USB-C computers and phones and tablets and whatever. And you know what? Like, yes, if I use the same shitty Apple cable that can give me up to 100 watts of charging power with my brick or with the right brick, okay, you know what? Like, that's amazing. Right. And again, with the right brick is, I think that part is a bit easier to figure out because you just need to read. But even then, like you mentioned,
even I've had to help brick, a lot of friends get actual chargers to charge their phones because they were charging at like insanely low rates.
Right. And that's what I mean. It's like people will think, oh, it has a USB-C connector. Why is it charging at 5 watts like the small, like the US plug to USB type A cable connector, excuse me. So that is not removed. And then you get the, once every blue moon, because I'm not a video producer or I'm not a photographer, I kind of want to plug in my phone for reason X. Let's say, I guess it's to plug a USB stick or it's to plug an SD card because you're one of the rare people that doesn't use their phone just to do phone photo stuff. You use a camera. Like, it's unclear even at that point which dongle you need to buy. And that's kind of, that's where it left me even more confused. Like I wished with this research, I was like, okay, you know what? I understand the tech pundits. That's why like I should have done my research. And now that I've done my research, I understand their thinking, and that's the reason why they say I want USB-C everywhere. But to me at this point, I'm like, no, it was like the connector is one thing, but that's sadly that's the simplest things to fix. The hard thing is the rest. And as I describe with the marketing that USB-C uses, the rest hasn't been really well figured out. And hopefully, possibly with some more recent rebranding, that might be figured out.
I think for a really long... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just about to say that maybe, especially on the charging side, you'll end up with devices, like most mobile Apple devices, you have two ways to charge them. because the one way uses the USB Type-C cable port, to charge, because the EU says you should use USB Type-C. And then you have the nice way to charge this, which is MagSafe, which is kind of wireless, not wireless. But like, that's why I think right now is like, if we were thinking about this new EU ruling and law, like, now most of all the Apple devices that will be impacted charge two ways, the Apple way and the USB Type-C way. And I'm like, that's nice. I like MagSafe. I like MagSafe on my laptop. I don't really use MagSafe right now on my iPhone, even if it's compatible, and I still have a Lightning iPhone. But weren't supposed to centralize or focus on one way to plug everything? And it seems that, okay, no, maybe not. So you were about to bring up something.
Yeah, I think for quite a while, in the USB 3 generation kind of time period, the easiest solution was just buy a Thunderbolt 3 dock and buy only Thunderbolt 3 cables, and everything is mostly going to work. Now, obviously, the problem is, like, they added more USB speeds and they added more Thunderbolt generations, which means that, like, for that period in time, it was great. You could just freeze that period forever, and it was great. Now it's kind of back to being a mess, because you're not sure how Thunderbolt 4 and Thunderbolt 5 are going to play nicely with the various USB things. There's still very low supply for anything like USB 3.1, 3.2 level of hubs that work reliably. Like, it's just not easy to do it. And even if you find ones that work reliably, the ones that work with things vaguely outside of the pure USB spec and that work with alternate modes as you expect might not be the case. And it just sucks. It just fucking sucks. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, this is what I've been bitching about ever since people have been complaining to remove Lightning, is the Lightning story is very simple. You bought something with Lightning on day one of Lightning coming out, and it would work basically the entire way until Lightning was abandoned. And you didn't really have to think about it. It was a proprietary solution, yes, but it was a proprietary solution that had a coherent story and it was compatible and it worked. And you didn't really have to think about it ever at all. It just did what the port said.
Right. And I think on top of that, a lot of people that used to be, for the sake of conversation, like, I'll call them Lightning fans, in the recent years started to really be dismissive of it. And I think the reason why is because on certain devices, Apple decided to not keep its data throughput up to date compared to the new USB standards.
Right, like, it's only USB 2 speeds, right?
On the iPhone, on certain iPads, it was able to get USB 3 point something speeds. Right, I forgot which model. I think it was like the Pros and things like that.
Yeah, it was probably like the Pro before the USB-C ones came out. Right,
right. So there was a small period where Lightning could achieve USB 3 point something speeds. And I think that if Apple would have been a bit more proactive to bring those speeds to the iPhone and to all the other Lightning devices, I think it would have tamed a lot of people about the Lightning port.
But then Lightning would have been in the same situation. They would be in the situation where you essentially have two different things going over the same connector, and now you've got a more complicated compatibility story. Like, the fact that it was only basically one generation of iPad Pro, and that for all intents and purposes, nobody really cared.
Fair.
To the point that I forgot that happened.
I'm an iPad Pro
consumer.
I kind of cared because I was considering, I never got one of those as a personal iPad. I think we got them at work. But I was kind of considering, if I were to get one personally, I think it's time to update my Lightning to SD card reader adapter to get the USB 3 speeds. That was the only consideration I made about this update. Is the SD card reader. So yeah. But no, you're correct. It would complexify, but I think it would have kept it more in the kind of like category for a lot of tech pundits versus, no, we need to switch to USB-C. Because a lot of the reason that people are mentioning, oh, we want to switch to USB-C is A, charging, and B, I want to offload my 3,000 gigabytes of video of my iPhone because I use it as a camcorder or as a professional video camera.
Mm-hmm.
And first one, okay, yeah. Like I discussed, I'm getting more inclined to say, like, yes, charging is a bit simpler to figure out if you ignored unknown brands. But I think in general, for cables, you should always ignore unknown brands.
But most people won't. That's the problem.
Most people won't. And I think that for that part, I think it's a USB IF problem and not the people problem. The same way that, quote unquote, Apple kind of forced Amazon to say, like, those Chinese knockoff cables for a lightning cable, you throw them out. If not, we'll come at you. Like, I think the implementing forum should do something about that to ensure that you have compliant cables everywhere.
Right. So that's kind of my pitch to USB IF, is that I think there needs to be a much more coherent story. First of all, like, the naming scheme is fucking disaster.
Agreed.
But you need to come up with some sort of marketing symbols that you can put on cables, on each end of the cable, that you can put on top of ports, that you can put everywhere imaginable so that the story is clear. And I think now that they have the logos with the actual, like, throughput on them, that's a good thing. The problem is you're not only thinking about throughput, you're also thinking about alternate modes, which are not branded because they're kind of like an offshoot of what USB is capable of doing that they don't really want to talk about, which kind of sucks. And power delivery is kind of separate to that. And you need to be able to convey, like, this cable is going to work for this and everything below. And you have to change your specs so that basically, like, no parts of the spec are optional. And
right.
People are going to fucking hate this because it's going to make devices more expensive. But the fact that there are cheap devices that choose to implement a quarter of the spec is the problem with the compatibility, is because the market is flooded with devices that don't implement a reasonable fraction of the spec so that things work compatibly. And it's frustrating. Yeah, it's just, I hate thinking about USB-C. I would much rather use literally anything else. It's so bad. And, like, I'm also pissed about HDMI because it's the same thing happening there. And I'm like, please, just somebody smack these people on the head. All of those standards writers, like, stop with the optional spec bullshit. Either your USB, either your HDMI 2.2 or you're not. Don't do, like, well, you can implement the HDMI 2.0 section of the spec and still be 2.2 technically.
But technically, yes.
None of your devices are going to work with it. It's like, oh, please stop this bullshit. Think about how this is going to turn out if everyone buys the shittiest devices when you're designing the spec, because the majority of your users are going to do this and they're going to wind up in bad situations. And I think, like, if we're being realistic, I think most people are only using USB-C for charging anyway, right? So maybe we should throw out USB-C as a data connector, and we should just say, hey, there is a power connector and there is a data connector, and they are different, and we reset. But people aren't going to like it because people want this one-port lifestyle, and I just don't understand it. It's fucking crazy.
I do understand it in principle, and I think that's kind of sadly where I was at the beginning of the episode and before I started to do the research, and I'm still there. It's like, we want one port to do two things, and it's magical to think like that, sadly. So
there is an elegance, there is an aesthetic elegance to having a device with all of the same ports. I get it. I think I can look at a computer that has only USB-C ports and think, like, wow, that's a really nice layout of ports. The problem is, at a certain point, you're going to need to freeze the functionality and allow everyone to come up to that level of functionality so that the dream can work. If you keep evolving the standards and not actually improving labeling at any point, you're just making the problem worse. And now we're going to have 64 different ways to negotiate a connection over a cable, and I'm always going to be looking for the right cables. Like, right now, it's really funny. Like, my HDMI cables, I've kind of had this. Like, I don't have that many USB-C things, so it's not a giant deal. But I think, like, pretty much every time I need a cable, I buy a new one just to make sure it's the new one
and you know with what?
The newest specs. Because that's I'm like, so fair. I can't trust any of my cables anymore.
Yeah, and then people say, oh, we want one port to rule them all because we'll stop buying new cables. And it's like, yeah, that's not what will happen. That's literally what you said will happen is every time you need a new cable, you'll be like, oh, I'm not sure if my cable is the right one, so I'll just buy the new one. I've done that every time, and I don't update my Apple TV too frequently, but every time I've updated my Apple TV, that's what I've done. Like, from the HD generation, I was like, okay, at the Apple store, they sell the right cable for this. And then same thing with the 4K cable. Like, okay, I bought the 4K version. Let me buy the 4K cable because they say it's 4K, and I'll trust what they say. And guess what? They were right because I also tried the previous HDMI cable, and then it would stop. It would break in funny ways. Again, I knew it would, but I echo your feeling about that. And I think in the end, we'll still end up with a shit ton of cable that we'll end up throwing after 3 or 4 years because they're more or less useless.
God, I'm so angry about ports right now. Thank you for that.
I'm kind of sorry, but not sorry about this because your angriness combines well with my general despair and pessimism about this whole situation where I think people need to be careful while they recommend the switch to USB-C because it is not a magical land that will come and then everybody will be happy about it. There's still a lot of technical knowledge you have to have around, and I hope in this episode, while it was quite confusing, that it tried or it made you aware that at least this is not the magical land that it seems to be or that a lot of people make it to be. You have to do a lot of your research, and sadly, it is not a simple world, even if we're using one and one port only.
Just use wireless. It's easier.
Oh, boy. You want to finish the episode on that note? Oh, boy. Okay. And on that note, that's it for me.
Alrighty then. If you want to find the show notes for this episode and all of the confusing graphics and names for USB specs, you can find them at limitlesspossibility.net/217. You can also find all of our back catalog over at limitlesspossibility.net. We are on the Fediverse at limipo_podcast@mastodon.social. Go send us your feedback for Game of the Year. We are also individually on the Fediverse. I am at Socarina at icosahedron.website, and Luca Divier is at
Luco, that's L-U-C-C-O, at mastodon.social.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.